Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Selling Greenville, your favorite real estate podcast here in Greenville, South Carolina. I'm your host, as always, Stan McCune, realtor right here in Greenville, South Carolina. You can find all of my great contact information in the show notes if you need a realtor here in the Greenville area, or I can contact my reload department if you need a realtor outside of the Greenville area. So just let me know. And just a reminder, please like, rate, review, subscribe to make sure that you don't miss future episodes of the show. So just pull up your app, podcast app, whatever, hit the 5-star button. If you're on YouTube, leave a little comment. All of those things support the show. So I would really, really appreciate if you guys could do that. Really the only things I ask of you guys. So please go ahead and do that. And then we should be good to go. Today, I'm really excited. I have a guest. It's been way, way, way too long since I've had a guest on the show, but we have one today. It is the owner of Carolina Appraisal Partners, Chris White, a great appraiser in the Greenville area. We are building bridges in this show, right? Realtors and appraisers are supposed to hate each other. But no, we are building bridges in the show. So Chris White, welcome to the show. If you want to say anything to introduce yourself, now you've got the floor.
Yeah, thanks, man. I'm excited to be here as well. Stan and I have known each other for a little bit. We crossed paths on a couple of classes we've taken together, and we have an innate interest of weird data and like analyzing that data in real estate market. So a little nerdy here, a little nerd fest going on, but it's cool. I'm an economics major, so that goes in many years ago, that is, but it goes in line with what I do for a living right now. But I have owned my company, and I have been a residential real estate appraiser in the Greenville Spartanburg market for over 20 years now. I think this is my 22nd year, if I'm doing my math correctly.
Amazing.
Yeah, it doesn't seem real sometimes. I've been through some crazy stuff. We've been through the 08, 09, 10 thing. Been through 2000 pandemic versus 2022 chaos. Now we're here.
So I didn't plan to ask this question, but what was the craziest period of time in your opinion as an appraiser?
Yeah, so that's a great question. I think the beginning of the 07 crash was really, you can kind of like I said, I'm an economics major, and I'm looking at this data of days on market, and I'm looking at this data of houses on the market. And, you know, back then they had what was called, you know, these subprime loans going on. People were getting, loans at 103%. So they're getting 3% back to buy furniture or whatever. And they had like, 550 credit scores and, all this stuff was going on. So seeing all that compile and then, not having any equity in their homes, they literally just, let them go back. I saw one guy, I did an appraisal for one guy who had two houses. He bought two houses in 1 year. But they both got foreclosed on within 1 year.
Wow.
Within 12 calendar months of each other.
Unbelievable.
It was nuts to see all that, And then seeing the rebound of it too and how slow it was to come out of that, because it was really 2009, beginning of 2010, if I remember correctly, that was, you started to see a little traction, a little momentum. Those are the days. I have a real estate license as well. I'm a broker as well. I don't do any of that because it's too hard of a job. But, when me and my wife operated our brokerage, you get a showing request over for a house in 2010 and you go out and bake cookies, spruce out the house, get a bathroom going on, whatever it took.
Bring your top shelf bourbon with you, whatever. Yeah.
We couldn't afford it back then.
Realtors can always afford top shelf bourbon. We find a way to get through the slim markets. Did you ever deal with any of those famous ninja loans? No income, no job.
Oh yeah, I've got a couple stories about those. Actually, I knew one guy that was renting houses down in Greenville, and he was doing no doc cash out refis on them. So he'd buy them, and pay $30,000 for them, forward a list of stuff he was gonna do to the bank and then cash out 110 and then never do any of the work on it. I don't know where he is now, but I did probably 6 or 7 of these for the bank. And I'm like, this isn't a good idea, guys. No doc cash out refis on that, but he probably had a portfolio of 10 to 12 of them where he was 80 to 100 grand upside down on each house.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, absolutely. That's,
well, I'm not a big fan of the federal government, but there were some things that they had to change that they did change. And seems like they've cleaned up some things. I guess you could argue that the federal government was why all that subprime nonsense happened to begin with, but we won't get into all that.
What happened also in conjunction with that is there was a lot of fraud going on too, you know, because when I first started doing this, we used to knock on a bank or a lender and say, hey, can I do some of your appraisal work? You know, just, you know, any guy hanging a shingle out there that we just come knock on it. And then this is what the conversation would be. Well, you can have this one if you can get it coming at 250. And literally, I mean, that's how business was done. So, I mean, yes, there are some things that were, you know, moved towards more normalcy and protecting the consumer, you know, which is good. But, you know, it's never good to swing the pendulum all the way to the other side as well. And, you know, you had HVCC and you had the Dodd-Frank Act and all that stuff going on right after that. And they're just basically, hey, real estate agents, hey, lenders, don't ever talk to the appraiser. You know, that's what was being conveyed to the. I had a girl that went to church with me. And I saw her in church and she was a lender. And she turned her back. She goes, I can't talk to you. I'm like, I think we're all right if we talk in church, not about real estate. I don't think that we're going to get in violation of the Dodd-Frank Act.
So. Yeah. Someone told me that when I first started in real estate, there was a time where I had a friend of mine that I went to church with who wasn't using me as her agent, but she was talking about real estate with me because she knew that that's what I did for a living. And someone was like, you can't do that. She has another agent. I'm like, I think she can talk big picture real estate with anyone she wants to, like, regardless of whether she signed an exclusive right to buy or whatever. So anyway, it's funny.
Well, of course, you follow it up by saying, yeah, that other agent is trash, so you might as well use
it. That's right. Just cancel that. Cancel that agreement you've got with them.
Just kidding.
Actually, one of the questions I had on here, I'm just going to jump right in because I'm curious with what you just said. So I had written down, what's one thing, if you could change one thing about our current appraisal system, what would it be? And I feel like that you kind of segued right into that. I'm curious what comes to mind.
Yeah, there's a lot of them, really. You know, I think there's a couple big problems with the process and how it all goes out. I think there's a misconception that we hold things up or that we're the ones that are killing the deals. And realistically, what our job is to value a property for. And we're talking about mortgage lending now, you know, we're talking about bank work. You know, our job is to make sure that the asset that's being purchased by the purchaser, if they default on it, that the lender can get their money back on it. They're paying a fair price. So, you know, one of the things that has happened during the whole mess is that, you know, now we're given the onus of saying your house is worth $410,000. Well, in reality, the way the appraisals work is it's really not that easy to do. And it's really not that easy to be that good at it. You know, if you got a bad appraisal is if it's $402,680, then there's not a soul alive that can tell you that's what the house is worth.
For sure.
You know, so, you know, one of the things we can, you know, focus on is, you know, let's say, you know, I appraise a house and the comps after they're adjusted are at, you know, 380 to 420, and there's a contract of $400,000 on it, then I'm putting $400,000 on it because it's within the range and it's there. But we're given the task of, you know, telling you exactly what the lender is telling us. What exactly does this house worth? You know, but there's too many nuances to real estate. You know, like I always use this example is what if you have two houses that are identical next to each other and they're both listed for sale. One of them smells like cat pee. You know, that is something that you have to deal with, right? I mean, it is, but how do you adjust for that? You know, we can't make random adjustments. You have to make adjustments based on market data. And one of the tools we rely on is the MLS. So how many times have you put in a listing stand that said, this house smells like cat pee?
Never. I've never put that.
Very, very hard to get discernible information if you don't know the nuances of it. And that's how the market kind of moves.
Now, I have told appraisers before. I've had appraisers call me and ask me, and I'll tell them on the phone, yeah, it smelled like cat pee.
Yeah. So, I mean, but that's vital information that's something you really need to know, or, you know, just those little nuances of real estate or floor plan or something like that, you know, that move around like that. So, you know, that's the major thing I would like to see happen on that side is let us just do like, hey, the house is worth 380 to 420. You figure it out. And if it's under contract 410, loan the money. That the other thing, the misconception on the lending side is too, is that I'm almighty dictator of all that's good with lending, but I'm not. The lender, if I come in at 405 and it's a 410 contract, they can still let that thing go through for $410,000. I mean, that's what the, I mean, that, you know how many times in the history of mankind that's happened? None, because they don't want the responsibility of that. Now, I think the other thing too is, you know, we're moving it towards more valuation modules, you know, the automated stuff for, you know, the Z word, those type of situations. That's not good for the industry as well. Sure. What's going to happen if you don't have boots on the ground, or if you have boots on the ground that don't know what they're doing, is you're going to end up with a lot of overvalued properties, undervalued properties. Putting your eyes on things, one of the most integral parts of the appraisal process.
Absolutely.
You got to have somebody that knows the differences and how those things are connected to the buyers and how those things are connected to the overall market. Like, you know, how they add value, how the contributory value of those things are perceived in the market. And guess what? That's fluid. I mean, you can't, like, you know, here's a good example of that, like pools. During COVID, you had kids at house. We couldn't go out. We couldn't go on vacation. So people are moving, and they were moving from big cities. They were moving from Chicago. They're moving from LA. They're moving from Phoenix. They're moving from Dallas. They're moving to Greenville. Well, during that time, I saw the contributory value of pools go up exponentially, like literally $30,000, $40,000 they're paying for pools, not to install them, of houses versus didn't have pools. Well, then guess what happened? Those people, we got out of COVID. Those people understood that pools are expensive. There's a dead frog in there. They had to clean it all the time. There's chemicals that got to go in. You know, all those things happen. So the contributive value of that pool moved the other way. And now it's back a little bit less than it was during the COVID time. So if that's kind of how the market moves. You have to be in tune to it on a daily. That's why, you know, podcasts like this or looking at data or looking at the MLS statistics are vital to understanding how all this moves in conjunction with the overall economy and how it relates to us as buyers and sellers, or in the industry of where we're going with this, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So you covered a lot of good misconceptions in there. With regard to appraisal specifically, what is the most common misconception that you run into that maybe realtors have, or maybe buyers or sellers have, when it comes to appraisals?
Yeah, just the scope of work that goes into the forming the value of the opinion of value. You know, in any given report, I might have, you know, a typical one, 4 to 6 hours in a report. You know, they see me at a property for 15, 20 minutes, and I'm like, dude, this guy's making bank, but they don't see the back end of it. They don't see how I'm pulling comps. They don't see all the data I have. They don't see all that stuff that goes in on a daily basis to formulating all these things that go into the valuation of that particular property. You know, so that's one of the things you really have no idea. I always tell real estate agents, you know, if anytime you want to follow me around for a week, I guarantee you're going to be really tired at the end of the week, and I guarantee you'll have no idea what I do. I actually, one of the girl that works with me now, Jennifer Wills, she is an agent as well, and she's now a certified residential appraiser. Congratulations, Jen.
Awesome.
But she had no idea. Like, she went through this, and it's been a course of 2.5 years of getting trained, and she just got now where she's, you know, in second grade of two and a half years of going through what we have to go through. And by the way, it's not getting any easier, you know, with all the regulations and what Fannie Mae is doing with the data, and, you know, how we have to make, you know, make comments on every little dumb thing under the sun. And again, more government is never a good idea, in my opinion.
And I'm guessing that appraisers are probably, you know, for those listening or watching that don't know, there's a lot of debates right now about multiple listing services, if they should even exist, if realtors should be required to use them, et cetera, et cetera. I'm guessing you as an appraiser are pretty much in favor of the MLS and of as much data being in there as possible.
Yes, but I don't care if it's MLS or Zillow or an independent. I mean, I think idealistically, like, there's a couple ideas out there being floated right now about statewide MLSs, or even, you know, some nationwide ones. And it would be, if I had my way, it'd be geared towards appraisers. You know, we could have our own independent. But for every one of us, there's 300 or 400 agents, so we don't have the clout. You know, our coalitions are not like NAR. You know, we have very little power in anything. But, you know, idealistically, it'd be nice to have an appraiser only, you know, MLS of it or whatever data source that we can really pull out good information. But again, you're only as good as the data. So who's putting the data in there?
Right.
you're creating a whole nother, whole other sense of problems, set of problems as far as that is concerned. But you know, MLS is the most prevalent and the most key part of doing our job. And you also have to take that as an appraiser to know that it's a marketing tool. So, you know, like for instance, we all know in the industry what handyman special means. It means it's a turd, you know? It means it needs a lot of work. Or, you know, what's another one? Cute or
well maintained.
Yeah, well maintained. Cozy. Cozy means it's tiny. Cozy means it's small. So all those things
better than new.
Better than new. Yeah.
I did a whole episode years ago. I've been doing this podcast for over 5 years now. I did an episode years ago that was realtor code words. I just did it for fun. So yeah, I've got
I'll
all
have to
those.
Check that one out. I'm sure I know them all.
Oh, you for sure have been exposed to all of them.
Yep.
So, what are to be like practical here? What are things that parties or realtors can do in a transaction that can help appraisers specifically?
I think one of the, I'm a relationship.
Besides being specific in the multiple listing service in the listing.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. So as far as that is concerned, you know, there's in the Greenville MLS Paragon, they use a section of the input is member remarks. And that's not shown to other people. It's not shown to anyone else. It's just shown to people that have privy to access the MLS. And any kind of information like the cat pee situation would be great to know by reading the listing if it was in there. And you know, not necessarily marketed towards the general public, but at least stuff that we would know. Square footage reporting is another thing. If you're not currently measuring your house in the ANSI standards, then you probably should be, because that's how the standard is. So if you're just hiring a marketing company to do a cubicasa on it, and then an appraiser goes out, you might be a couple hundred square foot off on the listing from what it actually is size wise. And you know, if you're supposed to be 3,000 square feet and it's 2,800 square feet, obviously that's a fair chunk of change as far as an appraisal is concerned. So you know, just you know, and be candid about it on the MLS. You know,
what about buyers and sellers? What can they do to help appraisers?
Real estate's strange in the fact that everyone thinks they knows a little bit about how real estate works as far as, you know, buying and selling of real estate. You've heard many times, oh, I can sell my own house. They stick a sign in the yard, but you don't see the intricacies that happen in the marketing or the period of time when it's under contract to where it actually closes, or the amount of work that goes in there. And I think that's true of appraising also. It's like, I think most people think I have a bag of numbers that I just like reach my hand into to just throw in there and let it stick and fill out a form and turn it in. But I really do take pride in what I do, and I take pride in being correct, and I take pride in being fair in the eyes of a buyer and a seller. You know, so a lot of the misconceptions from buyers and sellers is that some things don't really matter in real estate appraisals. For instance, I appreciate the fact that you've got really nice curtains, and then you have plantation shutters, and that you have got a nice dog shed out back, but those things aren't necessarily going to move the needle for appraisals. Now, they might help in the marketing and they might help the marketability of the house, but it's not anything I can adjust for. I cannot adjust for anything that I don't have market data on. You know, so if you have something that, like you have a 30-foot patio versus a 10-foot patio, yeah, it's better to have a 30-foot patio, but how much better? Well, unless I have data to know that, and unless the MLS says that, unless I know about it, it's impossible to make any kind of, any kind of adjustment on that.
Sure.
And really how we deal with that stuff is moving it around in a macro environment. So for instance, if I've got the case where it's 380 to 420, you know, my range of, and I've got a really big patio, maybe I'll be above the mean, you know, because I have a few things there. But for buyers and sellers, the number one thing I would do is leave us alone. I like talking to people and I'm very social, you know that, but when I'm doing my job, I just want to be left alone and leave anything that's pertinent. I used to ask if I was doing refis, I would ask the owner, I'd be like, what do you love about your house? And what do you hope, what do you wish you could change about your house? And a lot of times it was not, you know, anything that would move the needle, but sometimes it was. And those are things that make me kind of consider. So, and the other thing is, I don't care if your bed's made, I don't care if the dishes are out, you know, you're not showing a house to an appraiser. So when I go into a house, I'm going to do my job. I'm not going to take pictures of your dishes. I'm not going to do any of that stuff. Just let us do our thing. Don't wait a week to get your mess cleaned up or put a shrub in or something like that. Just let the process be the process. Educate yourself a little bit. There's a lot of different, you know, nuances to the process. And there's a lot of good resources for buyers and sellers out there to say, hey, what should I expect in an appraisal? You know, just Google it. And, you know, that's a good idea to get there.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about you and your relationship with other appraisers. I'm just curious, and or maybe the appraiser consensus. Do you disagree with the consensus or with even local appraisers generally on anything? Is there something that's like, yeah, this is what the consensus says, but it's not really what I agree with? Is there anything like that, or has the government kind of eliminated that kind of potential?
Yeah, there's not a lot there that we, if you're doing bank work, obviously there's the major players in that are Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. So anything that's going to get sold to Fannie Mae, there's about this thick of guidelines that you have to adhere to. And then the other side of it is FHA or rural housing loans or VA. And those are a little different because, you know, VA is a little different than FHA and rural housing, but those are insurers and they have a different set of guidelines in addition to the guidelines for Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. So there's not a, I mean, there's always, whenever you get a bunch of people who think they're right all the time together, there's always discrepancies in how to tackle certain problems. But, you know, locally, it's like anything else. There's a set of people that are good at their job and they've been doing it a long time. They know what they're doing. And then there's a set of people that aren't necessarily that good. That's true of every profession. You just have to go out there and figure out who you like to do business with. And when you're accepting offers on the selling side, know that the lender matters. And the fact that the lender matters because the people I work with are not, you know, not big type places that just pick cheap appraisers. I always use this reference. You know, if you have a brain tumor, are you going through Google and saying cheapest brain surgeon? You know, if, no, that's kind of where I am in my life. And I understand for some people it's important, but when it's a big decision like buying a house, you want to get good people on your side, professionals. Absolutely. That knows what they're doing, that know how to handle these problems. And you want same thing on the lending side. They're going to, the good lenders are going to use good appraisers, period. And they're going to pay us well. That's how it is. I don't work for people. That's the truth. I can pick and choose because I've been doing this 20 years, but getting into the business wasn't like that. You took a lot of junk.
I had a local lender one time that we got a really bad appraisal and they kicked that appraiser out, however they can do it, they kick that appraiser out of their pool for the future. So I was impressed by that.
It probably wasn't an isolated event.
In my experience,
it's not like they don't kick people out for not hitting value. They kick people out for several different reasons or whatever. But the point to this conversation right now is that they have the ability to put four or five guys on that they know and trust to do good work. It's the same thing. You know, you have a stack of people that you deal with for roofing. If you need a roofer, you have a stack of people, insurance, you know, or whatever it is, you have people that you know and trust. We're have people that you know and trust in the business that you can rely on. And, you know, there's a lot of good appraisers in the upstate of South Carolina. There's a
Absolutely.
Lot. There's also a few bad ones too. And, like I said, I owned a brokerage. I've literally been on that side of it where I said, this is absolute junk. And it makes you sad because they're taking business away from you as an appraiser because they're turning in this junk work. But that's life, you know. Hopefully they won't be long around too long.
Well, my personal opinion is it's probably way worse on the realtor side of things in terms of junk work, because I see that all the time and from other realtors that I'm having to deal with.
But in your opinion,
the barrier to entry isn't quite as high as it is for appraisers.
That's incredibly true. But that doesn't mean in your business, it's a little different because once you get business in my business, you can pretty much do your own thing. You can do whatever you want to without a lot of repercussions. You know what I mean?
Sure.
In your business, if you're doing a junk job, then you ain't going to get any clients.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, the thing about learning and being good at your craft is adapting and you know, always learn about something. Always be, if you can understand that in the real estate business, this is a monster that is living and breathing and it changes day to day, then you can be successful. My worst experiences with appraisers are the ones that are like, well, this is how I've done it for 20 years. You're bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's Absolutely. Not a good answer ever.
And those are typically probably the worst realtors, honestly, that I deal with too. At the end of the day, is it's, you know, they're stuck in a model that, you know, that worked, you know, maybe, I mean, real estate moves very quick. What worked 5 years ago does not work today, in the world of selling real estate. So, yeah, definitely overlap there. Now, I know that you're not like this per se, but a lot of people have the impression that appraisers are kind of robotic and emotionless.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, does the average appraiser or do you feel anything when you do the valuation and you're like, yeah, this is way off from the contract price that I have?
That's a really good question. And like literally, like, I don't think feel bad's a word because, or, you know, it's not the right choice of words, but like,
what do you feel?
Yeah. The last thing I do is look at the contract. So I go through all the thing. And then the last thing I do is look at the contract because our job is to be unbiased. And that's sometimes hard to do, but for the most part, I try to work to see if I'm missing something, you know, if it's a significant amount. I mean, like I said, in a $5,000 in a 50 or a $500,000 transaction is not a lot of money. You know, if that's it is what it is. You know, there's some cases I've seen appraisals that came back that were $200 or $300 off, and there's maybe reasons for that, but that's just not, to me, that's just not doing a good enough job for you. And again, I'm not hunting a value, but I'm not good enough to tell you that I'm $200 right in a $400,000 transaction.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So I have a hard time myself being mad about anything if I'm right, you know, if I think I'm right, you know what I mean? I don't, but I will say this. I have done some refinance transactions under the reverse mortgage business that are sad because these people are in their houses. They're trying to borrow money to fix their houses. And because it's an FHA product, they can't get it because the house isn't worthy of quote unquote safe, sound, and secure. But they have $100,000 equity they can't tap into because they need to get a reverse mortgage on it. Or even just regular refinances and cash out refinances. So those sometimes are a little hard to stomach because no matter what the best solution for that particular person as a human being would be to get money out of their house where they have equity in it to fix it up. And I'm not talking about redoing the bathroom. I'm talking about having a bathroom that works.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But, you know, I try not to, you know, I try not to be a guy that's, I'm definitely not joyous when it contracts. I don't go, ha, I killed another deal here. But, you know, your observation about the roboticness and the is probably overall, I would say, accurate from a wide range of them. I happen to be split personality because when I am doing that side of it, I am very much like that. But I also have a gregarious side that is pretty social, which a lot of appraisers don't have. I mean, I've met them, I'm like, dude, you're just a wet fish or whatever, you know, a wet blanket, or I mean, just all boring. But that doesn't mean they're bad at their job or anything. Like,
of course.
And I've made a career on being me. Like the relationships I have are based on interviews like this, you know, where we can get together. That we can have a drink and like, that's how business is done, in my opinion. I have a whole career. I've based a whole career on that one thing. You know, I do lunch and learns all the time. I do various classes all the time. And
that was actually
one,
how we met.
Yeah, is it?
Yeah, but, yeah. It was a Holiday Ingram lunch and learn.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Shameless plug there. My wife works there. They're awesome.
They are awesome. They're my go-to for closing attorneys.
Are they? Yeah, they're. Maybe we can get them to give you a bone here and there.
I need to get them to be a sponsor. That was a freebie. Next time they gotta pay.
Exactly. But you know, those are how those that's how I was trained to be, is like look at it from the other side. And I think myself being a broker and being on that end of it, that does give you a perspective on how the whole thing works together. And having a buyer that's disappointed because it didn't appraise, or having a seller disappointed because it doesn't appraise, because those are real people, and you do have to take that out of it when you're doing your job. You know, like I said, I work to get it done, but if it doesn't work, if you get one of my appraisals in, and it's below contract, you know it's below contract. You know there's no data out there that I could use to support the value of that prop
Well,
that house.
that was going to be my next question, actually. Let's say that, to give your example that you gave before, where subject property, you come up with a valuation of somewhere between 380 and 420. Contract price is 425. Are you going to go with the higher end of that range, or are you going to do 420, or are there other factors that play there?
Yeah, there's other factors. If it's of my data set, is it the best or close to being the best overall? Does it have features that are better than the rest of them? Then I'll be towards the top end. If it's at 425 and my high end's 420, but it's not, then it's the Catpee house, and it's probably 375, 380. But there are other factors, you know. So like I said, I'll work for it, but sometimes it's, I mean, just life happens. It's not there. That is what it is. And understanding the difference between what you do and what I do too is integral to that, because what you're trying to do is sell the house for the most money. You know,
That's
that
right.
in essence, that's your job, is to get it, and that's what you are supposed to do. That's why you're an expert. My job is to figure out what most probable selling price for that house is. That's a completely different thing. You know, that's what most people would pay, not just one guy. And you've been in a situation before where you've advised the client, you're like, okay, you're paying too much for this house. It's over. They don't care because it's next to their daughter, or it's, you know, their pastor lives on the street, or, you know, they love the pool, or whatever that thing is. That doesn't mean that most people would buy that house for that much money. So that's integral. And by the way, while we're on the topic of that, in my experience, every single seller thinks their house is better than any comp that sold in the end over the last year. And every buyer thinks that their house that they're looking at is the worst house in
I did an
the
episode on this recently too, just a few weeks
MLS.
ago. It's crazy that every listing appointment, you present comps to a seller, and they're like, "Oh no, the living room's small. Oh, the pool is cloudy." And it's just like, okay, it's not going to be exactly 1-to-1 to your home, but we need to be realistic.
And by the way, in most tract type situations, you know, the living rooms, if they're 18 by 20 or 16 by 15, that's not something we're adjusting for. I mean, it gets absorbed in the overall square footage and everything else. So you can tell your sellers that that doesn't matter.
Do you get that sometimes, that people think that like a room size is material?
Yeah, I mean, one of the big debates that one of the probably the biggest question I get from real estate agents are, hey, can I call this a bedroom? And then they'll give me some random room or whatever. You know, what can you call a bedroom? You know, and understand again that you guys are marketing houses. So if it's a three bedroom versus four bedroom, it's a big deal. I mean, you're getting more eyes on it. But there aren't any set rules, so to speak, about bedrooms. It's kind of like I'll know it when I see it, other than the standards that ANSI set out, which are th this is something that you don't know, you might not know, but there has to be a minimum square footage of 70 square feet. It has to have a minimum width of 7 feet. It has to have egress from two means, which is a door and a window. It has to have an actual door on it, but it doesn't have to have a closet. I don't know if you knew that or not. So
We've
if
talked about it before, so I did know that.
okay, cool. So that you know, but that doesn't mean it is a bedroom, because if it's in the middle of the house and it was not meant to be a bedroom, and you have to go through a kitchen and a bathroom to get there, it's probably not a bedroom. It's just another room or whatever. So that's one of the questions I get more than anything, probably on agents. Can I call this a bedroom? Ask your broker. But those are the guidelines. If you think you can do it, because the most heated debates I've gotten into are agents dueling that one has a buyer that says it's a three bedroom house, that the fourth bedroom don't count. And then the selling agent's like, no, it's a bedroom. It's got this, this, and this. So there you go.
Yeah, I had someone one time, another agent, get angry at me because I called something a bedroom that they didn't think was a bedroom, but it was an older house and the floor plan was a little bit funky, but it was a bedroom.
Yeah.
And anyway,
you go to some mill houses, they didn't have any closets. It was four rooms. And you tell me that's a no bedroom house? I mean, no, those are bedrooms. People sleep. Yep.
Get yourself an armoire and put your clothes in there.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's pivot real quick here. And I want to be respectful of your time, so I don't want this to go on too much longer here. But what do you think about the state of the market in the greater Greenville area, just from your perspective? What's the market like?
This is another perception thing. So I think that our recency bias is that the market is telling us that the market's not good right now. Because we had a time in 2022 that was unprecedented. It was literally people coming here in droves, having tons of showings, having five cash offers and 22 other offers. And interest rates in the twos and threes. And we took that as being normal. And that's where we're thinking things should be. But historically, over the last 20 or 30 years, average days on market in Greenville was somewhere between 90 and 120 days. And interest rates were somewhere between 6.5% and 7%. That's where we are right now. The thing that's kind of weird about what we got going now is the active sales that are resales, not new construction, are struggling a little bit. And the reason is because we built a lot of houses around here and they're currently built and they're being built. And the builders are now offering incentives to get rid of some of these. So they're offering rate buy downs. They're offering a lot of closing costs and taking a little bit of financial hit. And most buyers, when they go to buy a house, will say, well, what's my monthly payment if we're getting a mortgage on it? So I can get into a brand new house for $200 less than this other house that's a comp.
Yep.
You have to kind of register that in your mind when you're going on a listing appointment and saying, yeah, these are new construction comps that are the same dollar amount, but there are better deals out there. Mm-hmm. Where are buyers going to gravitate towards that? So the last statistic I saw, and if you know something different, let me know, but 40% of the active listings in Greenville MLS are new construction.
That's crazy. I haven't run that recently, but that sounds about right.
That's crazy. That's a lot.
Yeah.
So what we're seeing in the market is resales taking a little bit longer. With that being said, the days on market are like 60. I think it was like 58 or 52 or something. I can't remember exactly what it was for the last month. Mm-hmm. And it's trending the same way. And prices are, by the way, the prices, the median prices are up. Not a lot, but they're up over last year. So is the market bad? I don't think so at all. There's another statistic I saw this week in another class I was attending that homes that are priced properly are selling in an average of like 14 days and at 100% of ask price. Homes that are overpriced are taking up to 90 days and they're selling for 92%. So it's integral to have somebody that knows what they're doing as their agent or real estate appraiser to get an accurate, honest opinion about what that house is actually worth in the market today in order to do that. So I think some of those stats are skewed based on where we are. But overall, my opinion is we're fine. This is normal. We're moving towards normal. Guess what, Stan? Equilibrium is good. Like a buyer's market's not necessarily good all the time. The seller's market's not necessarily good all the time. When it fluctuates and you're moving towards something, I mean, how it should work is like this, right? It shouldn't be like this.
No, definitely not.
That's bad for everybody.
Yep.
You know, so just because we're one side, and honestly, it's been a rough few years for buyers. Wouldn't you agree?
And it's still, to be honest, it still is. It's still not.
Yeah, because rates suck.
Yeah.
I mean, compared to what they were 3 years ago. But if you can get people to understand, rates really don't suck. They're about normal. I bought my first house at 8.5%, FHA loan, 8.5%. I was happy to get it. You know, but when they go down, then you get better house. You know, you can move around and that's, you know, that's craziness. But that's not anything that happens fast is going to burn out. You know what I mean? And that's not a good place to be in as a, as either as an economy or as a real estate market. And the one other thing I'd like to say about, I think we've done some good stuff in the upstate to prevent us from going back to where we were in oh, I read a lot of stuff online, a lot of people, and they're just like, oh, there's a real estate crash coming. I don't think so, because everyone that I know that hasn't bought a house in the last year and a half has got a ton of equity in their house. Not only that, they've got an interest rate around 3 or 4%. So they're going to do whatever they have to stay in that house. It's
For
not going
sure.
to have a mass foreclosures. So the second thing is the there's an uns, un, I would say a unstableness right now with what's going on, because we just changed administrations, and Trump is just going in there and he's just cleaning the house. I don't know how that's gonna, I'm not making this political at all. I am devoutly libertarian. Leave me alone. Let me do my thing. But there, his policies can do one of two things. It could really set us up for an incredible run over the next 10 years, or you could, this could really be bad in the short term. It could be really bad in the short term. And I've even heard some people say this is all being done so that he can get rates back to 3%. So he's going to artificially stimulate a recession to make sure that the rates come to 3% again.
That's one
To
theory.
again, I'm not proponent of that, or again, I'm just saying,
No
I don't know
comment.
exactly, no comment. But I mean, it's not without the realm of possibility. I mean,
Right, for sure.
to do.
Well, he has said that he wants to get rates down. He has multiple times, and multiple people around him have said that. But he,
Also
I,
says he wants Greenland to be the fifth.
that's
But
right.
anyway, I
We
won't.
just got political. Oh
No. Stop it.
no.
Reverse. No.
So.
My point is, though, there's a lot of uncertainty, I think, in a lot of people, just so that, But here's another thing: that if I'm not mistaken, the jobs rate or the inflation rate came out yesterday or the day before, and it's down to 2.8. So. And it was 3.1, and they were expecting it to be 3.0, and now we're at 2.8, just like that. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't trust a lot of those government numbers, though. I don't know if you do or not, but I think there's a fair amount of, like, they always do corrections on all the job, like the job market too. There's like, oh yeah, we lost 300,000 jobs, and oh no, they're just somewhere else. We forgot what to do with them. They're
Yeah,
just.
they usually do get revised. They don't, people think that the revisions are political. That's the part that I disagree with. I agree with the numbers. The fresh numbers aren't always accurate, but I think the revisions usually are. And I do not think the revisions are political. There's a lot of data. I won't even get into that.
No, I'm with you. But why even do the fresh ones then?
Yeah,
Just wait.
they probably shouldn't even do it. I don't know if the Federal Reserve or other organizations within the government have like a model that they can run those numbers through and kind of, I do this actually. If you have listened to my whenever I do the market stats for GGR, there's always two numbers that are always wrong, the fresh numbers. And so I will discuss my little overlay of like, okay, and it's the inventory number is this, but I really think it's going to get revised to this. So I know that going in, so I don't know. Maybe the government does. I might be giving them way too much credit, though. I don't know. I'll probably give them too much credit.
I don't know. Like, I don't know. Like the whole thing with inflation too. I mean, and the uncertainty there. But there, did you know that there's other ways to combat inflation than the rate? I mean, there's other things you can do than just jack the rate up and down. I mean, and it would it kill us to be a little proactive sometime until wait until it's like. It's like we go through this thing and it's like, well, we're humming along. It's 2.5% interest rates and all this stuff. And then all of a sudden there's like, wait a minute, why is everything so expensive? Couldn't we have done this a little bit before? But keeping rates down in the housing market, keeping interest rates in the housing market down for so long was artificially a stimulating.
Oh, yeah, it was awful.
I think that's where we're going again. I mean, how many years were they in the fours and fives? I mean, I remember when we did a refinance at five, I thought I won the lottery. And then we did a 15-year cash out at 2.7%. I'm like, yeah, by the way, we're never moving.
No, I wouldn't think so. I was going to ask you if you needed to sell your house, but I won't ask you that now.
good. I do have a lake house for sale down at Greenwood.
Okay. All right. Well, if anyone needs a lake house in Greenwood,
Yeah.
contact Chris. Are
Yeah.
you? Sorry. Did you say you're still active as a broker, right?
I have an active license, but
Okay.
I don't. My wife's also a broker, and it's listed with her.
Okay. Okay. All right. Well,
I mean,
there you
I'm
go.
a client, but like, I haven't even looked at the new contract, so I got her to do all that.
Yep.
I
That's
have my hands full running this thing here.
I cannot fully understand that. Couple more questions here. So with regard to the market, is there anything that you feel like you can see from your vantage point as an appraiser specifically that perhaps realtors or listeners of the show wouldn't be able to see from their vantage point?
I think we need to take the rose-colored glasses off a little bit and look at the real facts. You know what I mean? Because I think everyone's wishing for something as far as selling a house right now. They're like, well, I see all these comps a year ago. A year ago is not now. So if you're pulling comps right now, pull recent and see what's going on recently over a year ago, because it's really a different market right now. And it's not bad. It's just different.
How is it different in your opinion?
It's definitely slowing down. I mean, it's definitely not, it's not where it was a year ago. A year ago is probably when it's, I don't know. I'd have to do, and it's pocketed too. Like some places in Spartanburg are doing fairly well, and some places in Spartanburg aren't doing well at all. Some places, like places in Greenville, Simpsonville are doing really well, and some aren't. I've seen houses that are on the market, and I'm just like, why is this house still on the market? It's been 100 days. I've seen houses that go under contract in 2 days. I'm like, why are people buying that for that much money?
Yep.
So I think that a little bit is fueled by the patient people that had cash and they don't necessarily need a mortgage right now. They got fed up with the whole frenzy. So they said, I'm going to stay where I'm at. I got a pile of money. I don't need a mortgage. So rates don't matter to me. And I'm going to be really picky moving forward. And that's kind of where a lot of people are with it right now.
Sure.
But I you know, it's, I think that if I had to put one word on where we are right now, it'd just be uncertain. It's really uncertain. And I don't have a general rule of thumb to say, oh no, this is how it's going to go, because it really could go one of two ways. I think within the next 2 years, we could go gangbusters again if certain things happen, or we could move the other way and kind of go back into more of a buyer's market. By the way, a buyer's market is like real close to a bubble burst. I mean,
Yep.
you know what I'm saying? It's like one of those things, you want a seller's market, but as long as rates are sixes, we'll be okay. If we move into the sevens and seven and a half and eights, we're going to be a little bit of trouble, I think.
Yeah.
But I don't see that happening, because we're going to give them credit. The Fed sees this and they're going to be proactive about keeping us where we are while keeping inflation at bay.
We'll
3%
see.
inflation. People say inflation, 3%'s not that bad. If we could keep it at 3%, we're okay. As long as
Sure.
wages keep up. Inflation by itself is irrelevant. If you have a 5% inflation rate and and wages are getting increased by 7%, inflation doesn't matter to most people, because your buying power is better.
Yep.
So that's one thing. You know, all these pocket, by the way, the advent of Twitter and Facebook has made everyone an expert in politics, real estate, and economics. Everyone has their opinion out
And
there.
vaccines, I've learned. I learned that one the
Oh,
hard way.
yeah. Yeah, exactly. PhD. Yeah. So.
Well, so yeah, no, I agree with I agree with all that. I with the exception of I don't know that the Federal Reserve cares about mortgage rates specifically. They don't seem to be super concerned about the housing market. You hear their statements that they make. They always say the housing market's fine. So I'm not entirely sure what to make of that. I know they look at the housing market, but time will tell, I guess. We'll find out soon enough.
Yeah, fair enough.
All right. One, maybe two more questions. How will you have to adjust the way you work if the market shifts back to a more intense sort of seller's market like what we had? Or perhaps if you want to take it in the other direction, if it shifts to a buyer's market, if we have a major shift, how will that change your work as an appraiser?
Yeah, I think. And if, like, in 2022, I probably turned away more work than I accepted. Just and you cherry picked what you wanted to work on. Do I want to do new constructions that I've done seven in the last 3 weeks in the same? Yeah, I want to do those because it's easy money. You know, there's like four models. I already did them
Yeah,
all. You
sure.
know, where we are with it now, sometimes you got to, it seems like there's a lot of weird stuff out there. I'm getting properties now. There's like, two houses on one lot, or, just different things that aren't typical that you got to kind of pick up when you have to, you got to keep the wheels greased, so to speak. But like I said, I haven't not been busy in 10 years. So, I don't see myself changing much of anything other than having to, maybe talk to a few more lenders or something like that. But I mean, most people that have been doing this a long time know who their good appraisers are, and they're already on most of the good panels. And I had a guy reach out to me today. He goes, "Hey, when's the last time you've done one of my appraisals?" And I'm like, "It's been a while." He goes, "I'm getting you back on there. I'm getting a bunch of nonsense in lately." But when we start struggling a little bit and those things matter, then like back in the day, you're just trying to churn and burn it. So whoever could get to it the fastest. In 2022, sometimes I'd say, "Hey, I get this in 3 weeks, bank," and they'll be like, "Whatever, just do it." Yes. Now it's like, "I want it back in 3 days." I'm like,
Yeah, right.
that's a little bit of a struggle,
Sure.
But I don't. The cream always rises to the top, and I think if you're an agent, you're going to be this. You be creative, you be on top of it, and you'll be fine. The good people, the good agents, the professionals will always be there. You won't have to work at Home Depot because I love these people who say I'm a whatever and a real estate agent. No, you're not. You're whatever because you can't do this part time.
I'm an
I mean,
insurance
I understand.
agent and a real estate agent. It's like, no, you're an insurance agent. That's what you're
Yeah,
doing.
well, exactly. You can't be good at it's like me. I picked. You know what I mean? I chose not to sell real estate anymore. So, because you can't do them both well. You really can't. It's just not how it works. On the other side of it, buyer side, I don't. I think you'd have to. There's always ways. There's always opportunity for people that have an expertise. And I think if you market yourself properly, it'd be hard to. You'd have to go out and dig a little bit for me. I'd have to go chase some divorce work or probate work or something like that. But I mean, valuation's valuation regardless. There's plenty of appraisers around that don't do any bank work. They don't do any of that. They
Interesting.
just yeah. They just do divorces or probate work or whatever. So,
How about
and
that?
I honestly, the way Fannie Mae is going, I wouldn't mind transitioning into that maybe one day. So,
Because of how many more restrictions and
oh,
overlays they're putting on?
yeah. If you've got an opportunity on April 2nd in Halliday Ingram is sponsoring a class that me and a local lender, his name is Brett Chappell, we're doing like kind of exactly this. We're doing like a panel regarding the economy and some of the changes that Fannie Mae has given us to so what basically in a nutshell they're telling us now we have to analyze each sale that we use in a report and make an adjustment for time per month.
Oh, per month.
Per
Interesting.
month.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
So
it was that has that been is that something that they planned out a while ago that they were gonna do now, or is that something that they are responding to the market and they're like, we need to do this?
I think it was stemming from the fact that this is my personal opinion. I have zero facts for this whatsoever.
Okay.
But I think because of all the issues with the bias in appraisals, that a lot of those appraisals were coming in low during a time that there was an increase in the market. I think it was their reaction to we need to take a better look at what the time factor plays in the actual adjustments that were being made for a comp that's 6 months old.
Sure.
That's where I think it's coming from. I don't know that to be 100% sure, and it makes sense. And I agree, I 100% agree with time adjustments, but the market and the sales and the data that you compile is too hard to figure out what, especially with cyclical, seasonal developments and influx of sales and all that kind of thing, to see exactly how those adjustments are made on a monthly basis. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for
And
sure.
again, this goes back to my original a point when I said, "Hey, it's 380 to 425. Just let us roll with it." You know what I mean? Just get loan on it or whatever. I don't care. But to try to figure out what a $1,200 time adjustment for something that happened 30 days ago, is that really relevant?
Yeah.
But the amount of effort that goes into figuring it out is it's another 45 minutes of analysis. Just on every single appraisal report, just to figure
Unbelievable.
out.
Yeah.
And by the way, the data ain't that good.
I
Like,
would
what about
imagine.
the
Yeah, I would
market has
imagine it's
got
not.
12 sales? What do I do? 12 sales in the last 6 months. What do I do
Are
with that?
you able to use stuff like the GJR market stats or anything like that?
You can use whatever you want to, as long as it's quote unquote credible. I mean, we've got some software that's really pretty statistic, very very, what's the word I'm looking for?
Specific.
Yes, it's way better than anything they have on that end of it, even
Sure.
for adjustments. But and again, this is all new stuff too, so we don't know how. I've got one software I use and it's absolute trash. I mean, you put it in there, like I had one I was doing today. It said I should make a $23,000 adjustment for a sale 6 months ago. No,
No, that's cr yeah,
I
that's
don't.
crazy.
Yeah, that's crazy. Imagine if I turn a report in like that to
An
what an agency.
upward adjustment, a positive
Yeah,
adjustment?
no, other way. It was a minus
A
adjustment.
negative. Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So, well, you didn't appraise $23,000. Why? Because there's a time adjustment in there for four, 6 months
You'd
ago.
get a call from the listing agent on
I bet so.
that one.
I bet so.
Incredible. Well, I think that this has been a great conversation. And Chris, I really appreciate you coming on the show once again. Was there anything that you wanted us to cover that we didn't, or do you have any last thoughts that you'd like to share?
I just if your audience is watching this isn't it, there are people that are in the industry. I just want you to know that you are blessed that we get a chance to do this for a living every single day. Is there's a, not a lot of things you can do in your life that gives you this kind of opportunity financially, this kind of opportunity socially, this kind of opportunity to have a really great life, and it's a beautiful living organism that we should cherish and love. So count yourself lucky to do that. If you don't know, if you're not in the industry, understand that it's not as simple as looking on a website to see what your house is worth or anything. There's a lot of moving parts to the real estate market, and it's constantly changing. So don't 100% don't whatever you learned last year is not going to be true this year. And don't listen to other people. I'll tell you, there's two people that are the worst to deal with in my profession, as far as our clients are concerned, or if I'm doing work for them. And I have many friends that are both of these, but I'm going to call you out right now.
Oh boy.
Lawyers and engineers, hard to deal with on
Not the
the
easiest to deal with on the sales side either.
appraisal side. But I love you.
Yes, we
I'm glad
love.
you're here.
Absolutely.
But hey,
Well,
I appreciate you having me on. I respect you're a smart guy, and I love the way you pour into data like I do. I think you'd be a great appraiser one day if you ever
I've thought about it, and then I look at how the I look at all I, so I looked at it like way back in the day, and I was like, oh my gosh, the amount of
It's hard.
just to be able to get to the point where you're able to just be independent and all of that, it's like,
It's hard. Well, not
whew.
only that, you're training your, like, if I take you on and then like you end up being good, you're just going to go do your own thing. So what do I get out of it for taking all that time, energy, and effort to do that?
Yeah.
It's there's several things that we've proposed over the years to combat that. But I think you said something earlier too that was very poignant. You said the barrier for entry on what I do versus you do are night and day. I think it needs to be harder for real estate agents, and I think it needs to be easier for real estate appraisers. It's just
It's
too.
not going to change, and I'm going to tell you why. Because we have a lot of legislators that are realtors and not a lot of them that are appraisers in our state legislature. It's literally that simple. So
That's
we because we actually tried to. So I'm on, as an aside, I'm involved with the Realtor Political Action Committee. I chair that committee. I'm involved with our state legislative committee as well. We tried to pass much stricter continuing ed and other things this past year, and it was shot down by by the House of Representatives in the state of South Carolina.
Like we got to do 28 every year, 28
Yeah,
hours.
that's way more than us.
Yeah,
Way, way, way more.
every other year. But yeah, exactly. But again, like you go into like look at you see all this gray hair? I'm one of the youngest dudes out there. You know what I'm saying? That's a
Yep.
problem too. You
Yeah,
gotta
that
have
is gonna be a problem.
100% because I told everybody that's come through my door as an apprentice, I've always told them this. I'm like, listen, once you get licensed, which is hard to get licensed, you don't know anything yet. It's like when you get your real estate license, they're like basically tell you how not to go to jail, and then you don't learn
That's
how to do your job. It
right.
takes you a long time to get good at your job, years. The whole
Absolutely.
10,000 hour thing, So
Yep.
10,000 hours of actual practical application, that's years of experience, and you have to be proactive on it, from both sides, whether you're an agent, appraiser, lender, whoever. You can't get good at anything until you do it a lot of times. You
One
gotta
hundred
do it
percent.
So it's hard. By the way, I'm not doing any more apprentices. I'm done. I'm too old.
I didn't even realize they still required apprenticeships. So
minimum of 1 year.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. It used to be two, right?
It used to be two, correct. Okay. Yeah, and they kind of relaxed a little bit of some of the other stuff too. It used to be two. It is one now. You do have to have a 2 year degree to get certified, or 4 year degree to get certified. 2 year degree to have to get your license, I think. I'd have to look at the LLR. Yeah, but like all you need is a GED to be an agent.
Well, if anyone, yeah, that's right. If anyone wants to or explore becoming an appraiser, I'm sure, Chris, that you would be willing to talk to them.
Don't call me. Call somebody else.
Not to be an apprentice, not to be as an apprentice, but just to kick the idea around.
The hard part of it is it's basically a year of no income, and then it takes you 3 years to get good after that. So unless you're right out of college or something, it's a hard, like if you're say 30 something and you want to transition into it, you better have another stream of revenue for a period of years. And that's hard. When I did this, it was 2 years and I ran a restaurant at night. So I would go with my trainer from 9 a.m. until 2. Then I would work my job from 2 to 10. And I did that for over two years. It's hard.
No
I'm
doubt.
Glad I did it though.
Yeah. Now you're glad.
Yeah, now I'm glad. It sucked then.
Well, Chris, thank you so much. Are you okay if I put your contact info in the show notes?
100%. Yeah.
All right. I'll put Chris White's contact info in the show notes. I think maybe you were going to say this before, but for all you realtors and perhaps non-realtors interested, Chris does home measurements as well, because if you're using that Cubicasa app, it only measures the interior walls. You will be losing square footage if you do that. Are you in agreement with that, Chris?
Yeah, I actually did a study on it, and it's actually pretty close on smaller, like rectangular houses. It does a really good job. It's an excellent floor plan tool. Mm-hmm. I don't want to say it's trash. It's not.
Sure.
It's not. It's an excellent floor plan tool. But if you're looking for ANSI square footage, the bigger the house is and the more cutouts and the bigger, it's just hard. It's open to below areas. A couple of them I did were almost 300 square foot off.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. That's a lot. That is a lot. And again, those are unique houses. You know, if you're doing a 30 by 50 ranch, it's pretty good.
Sure. Well, that makes a whole lot of sense. So Chris can help you if you need a pre-listing appraisal. If you need measurements, any of those good things, he can
probate,
help you out.
You have a probate client that needs a retrospective or something, divorce, anything you come across, we love doing that non-lender work too.
Awesome. His information will be in the show notes. So will mine. If you need a realtor, please like, rate, review, subscribe, all of those good things with regard to the show. And we will talk again next time.